Good morning, everyone. Welcome to today's edition of KDHL's AM Minnesota program. I have in studio today the smiling face of our county attorney, Brian Mortensen. Good morning, Brian.
Morning, Gordy.
Thanks for coming in.
Absolutely. Love being here.
Appreciate what you do and appreciate everything that happens in the Rice County court system. Unfortunately, we probably end up with too many cases.
We have a lot of cases.
But if you didn't have the cases, you wouldn't be catching criminals.
Right. So, appreciate the sentiment.
Yeah. Are we, in terms of counties our size, higher than most, lower than most, about in the middle? Or?
So, we fluctuate between the 14th and 15th largest county in the state. It's us in Crow Wing County.
And which is about what our population is.
Yep, yeah. Almost exactly the same. And I would say that our new cases aren't tremendously large for a county of our size, but the number of cases that are active in our court system is one of the highest in the state. We just got informed that our courthouse has the largest backlog in the state of Minnesota.
Is that because of COVID?
It's because of not trying cases. So we're trying to get cases tried, and for various reasons, it's difficult to get trials going sometimes.
Well, what are the reasons?
Sometimes it's defense continuances. Sometimes it's the court schedule. Sometimes it's
we don't have enough
new
judges.
Evidence. I would love it if we could get another judge. We have Judge Long became the chief judge of our district, and so that took a lot of her time away from our abilities in the courtroom. We have judges coming up from, I believe, Maurer County as fill-in judges for dockets. But they're not trying cases. And so it would be nice if the state gave us another judge. And I think our judges here would agree with that, that if we could have another judge.
But it probably won't happen with the situation financially that the state is in.
Probably not right now. No. So we just deal with it and continue to chug along and try to resolve cases as favorably as we can.
So you're saying that her being the chief judge of the district takes her away from the bench?
Well, she has a lot of other duties. So as the administrative judge, she has to review certain pleadings that happen throughout the state that fall to the chief judge. She has meetings throughout the state that she has to go to. So she, I believe it's 33% of her time is automatically attributed to her chief judge position.
So they have a sitting judge become the chief judge as opposed to hiring somebody else to do that job.
Yep, it's always a judge that had been practicing as a judge in the district.
You think that's a good practice?
I like having Judge Long as our chief judge. So, yes, it's just it's difficult in the courtroom sometimes when.
But what I'm saying is, if they just solely made her the chief judge, and then hired an attorney to take over those cases, wouldn't it be better?
Yes, if they gave us an additional judge for the expense of having the chief judge, that would be wonderful.
You know, although if it only takes a third of her time to do it, maybe, I don't know. I'm speaking out of turn, obviously, because I've never, ever done the job. Main reason I asked you to come on, Brian, is yeah. I had a listener call me here a few weeks back and said, you know, I think Mr. Chambers is about due for parole. I said, well, I know he was turned down a year ago by the Paul Schnell, right?
Yes.
Department of Public Safety. He's the only person that could do it. Until recently, they changed all that. Now there's some board, which includes the governor and the attorney general. And is Schnell on that board, too?
I don't know specifically if Schnell's on the supervised release board.
That's what it's called, yeah.
But I do know that Mr. Chambers is scheduled to go before the supervised release board on March 24th. Well, okay. That date could change. But as of right now, that's when they're planning to have him go before the supervised release board.
Have you been involved at all in this case?
I have not.
So who went before the court last year when he was turned down?
I don't know. So I don't have that information. So now,
but did someone represent Rice County?
Nobody from my office was present.
Is that not normal? That somebody from the county would go the prosecuted the case? And I know nobody currently in the office, your office,
right,
prosecuted the case, but I'm saying that your office did prosecute the case.
Well, we have to be notified of hearings in order for us to take part in them, and I don't recall ever being notified of any hearing in the past.
Well, don't you think they should notify the home county?
Yes. I think that we should all have an active role that in whether or not inmates are released.
That way his family could find out about it, too?
Yes. And that's part of the reason why I gathered information for coming on the show with you, so that
right,
all of Rice County knows that he's going before the supervised release board on March 24th. And the supervised release board meetings are now public, so you can watch them. If you go to the DOC's website under the About tab and click supervised release, you can actually pull up the videos of the hearings as they're happening. And there's an option for anyone to submit letters in favor or in opposition of an individual's release. And I would highly encourage Rice County residents to use that ability to voice their opinions.
Do you know, do they automatically inform the family, his widow, his kids?
I believe they have the obligation.
I'm talking about John Liebenstein, who was killed, right?
Yes.
I mean, they
believe they have the obligation, but I know that I will make sure that everybody is aware of the hearing date. And I have a feeling there's going to be a number of people responding.
Well, I'm sure there are some of his coworkers are still on the force, right?
Number of people that knew him.
I mean, he's a great guy. I used to love visiting with John.
Unfortunately, I never got to interact
right
with him.
No, I understand
all
that. You came after that.
Yeah.
But he was kind of a big bear of a guy. I'd call him a gentle big bear, if you know what I mean.
Kind of how everybody's described him.
He just was. He was a good guy. It was a sad deal. And during the trial, Mr. Chambers never voiced any remorse.
Unfortunately, that's not uncommon.
And I don't know if he has since then.
I don't either.
Yeah, because you weren't at the hearing last week.
Right.
So I'd be able to find a copy of that?
I don't know if those are posted. I know that the new supervised release board, everything is public.
Okay. And when did this come about? Within the last year, I'm guessing.
I believe that it was in at least the last year.
And so a year ago, Schnell refused his parole. So that means it had to be within the last year that this new board was put together.
Yes, it sounds like it's a new program.
Yeah. And he originally was charged as an adult. He was 17 when it happened.
Yes.
May 3rd, 1996. I-35, County Road 1. He was 17 at the time, but was tried as an adult, and he was found guilty of first degree, which is murder with intent.
Yep. Premeditated.
And he was sentenced to life without parole, but that has been since ruled unconstitutional, right?
By the U.S. Supreme Court, yes. And so all juvenile offenses that happened that resulted in life without parole have to be reviewed.
Well, and then I'd read, and correct me if I'm wrong, I can be wrong, I'm wrong quite a bit, but I thought I read that there's since then, we've changed our rule here in Minnesota. If you're a juvenile, it's the maximum you can get is 15 years in prison.
I'm not 100% sure on what the maximum is, but I do know that we can no longer sentence a juvenile to life in prison.
Do you have any pending cases that deal with juveniles and anything like this?
We have pending cases that deal with juveniles. We do not have any that deal with juveniles on that high level. We've got a number of higher level crim sex cases dealing with juveniles, but nothing that amounts to a higher level murder.
Okay.
Thankfully.
Speaking of juveniles, when I used to cover the court system on a regular basis, we had a very high juvenile crime rate in Rice County. Are we still high?
We're not.
Brian's thinking, what does he mean by high?
Yeah. With juveniles, it's difficult because the system takes so many offenses before somebody, as I would call it, is truly punished for their actions, there's a lot of rehabilitative efforts. And so when we're looking at juveniles, we're seeing a lot of recidivism until the stronghold of the system starts taking place. And so when juveniles are given slap on the wrists for a lot of their lower level crimes, it's hard to deter them to keep going.
So maybe, this is my own opinion, they should have harsher punishments early and be more of a deterrent than slaps on the wrist. They can perfect their craft, if you know what I mean.
We try to model our adult system for the punishment to fit the crime, and we don't do that as much with our juvenile system. I think that if courts had greater jurisdiction to put harsher sentences on juveniles, that we might have a better outcome. But right now, a lot of our juveniles see the system as just a blip on the radar. They go in there, they're back out, and they're being taught that not a lot happens to them. And so we see a lot of them when they turn 18 committing crimes, and now all of a sudden they're facing harsh punishment and they have to sit in a jail cell. And they don't understand why, because they had never faced true consequences.
Yeah. We got a lot to cover here. I'm sure when AM Minnesota continues, we'll visit more with Brian Mortensen. He's the Rice County attorney. But right now, I have to get our opening market report, or Jerry will have me in some jail somewhere. Werner Farm Seed Dundas helps bring this to you, along with NorthlandFarmBuildings.com. Craig Keller at the Keller Insurance Agency in Nearsville.
Soybeans and corn are lower on Monday morning. Cattle have just turned fully higher. Hogs remain mixed. I'm John Perkins with a Brownfield Market Update. Speed wins. That's why Stein's focused on delivering higher-yielding genetics faster than the competition. Why they release more new Enlist E3 lines than any other company. Stein has yield. Soybeans are lower, expecting the USDA to report solid harvest progress in the weekly update this afternoon. That's putting a lot of beans in storage with no new crop sales to China. November beans are down 2.5 at 10.11. January's 3 lower at 10.30.5. October bean meal's up $1.90 at $2.70.70. October bean oil's down 29 at $49.31. Corn's lower, monitoring the U.S. harvest pace and the mostly favorable planting weather in South America. Mexico and unknown destinations both bought U.S. corn this morning. December's down 1.25 at 420.5. March is 1.25 lower at 437.5. And wheat's mixed. U.S. winter wheat planting weather looks favorable, with the USDA's small grain summary and quarterly stocks out on Tuesday. Any USDA reports after Tuesday, though, a little bit questionable with a potential government shutdown. December Chicago's a half higher at 520.25. Cotton's mostly lower. Rice is mostly higher ahead of this afternoon's USDA numbers. December cotton's down 9 at 66.31. November rice is up 6 at 11.30.5. Live and feeder cattle have turned fully higher, watching the distribution of this week's show list. October live's up 30 at 232.10. December's 40 higher at 234.70. With additional support from the recent weakness in corn, October feeders are up $1.47 at 348.5847. And hogs are mixed, mostly lower currently on spread trade and questions about sustained demand. Pork was lower on Friday afternoon. October lean's down 72 at $100.77. December's 35 lower at 90.70. John Perkins, Brownfield.
Do you worry about how much someone drinks? Do you feel angry or depressed most of the time? Do you feel neglected or unloved?
Do you feel that if the drinker loved you, she or he would stop drinking?
If you answered yes to any of these questions, you are not alone.
Not everyone trapped by alcohol is an alcoholic.
Families and friends are suffering too. Al-Anon and Alateen can help. Call 1-866-200-0223 or visit alanon.org/help.
The United States Deputy Sheriff's Association is a national nonprofit and the largest non-governmental provider of services to law enforcement. The USDSA assists city, county, state, and federal agencies with free safety equipment donations and officer survival training, along with cash donations to families of law enforcement officers who perish in the line of duty, college scholarships for the children of law enforcement, a citizen awareness program, and more. For more information on the USDSA and how you can help, visit usdeputy.org.
AM Minnesota. Minnesota on the Mighty 920 KDHL.
Again on AM Minnesota, Brian Mortensen is our Rice County attorney. He's our guest this morning. Let's see here. Oops, I got the wrong week. Tomorrow, Tammy Ressler stops by. She's with the Studio Art Tour. They do this every fall. On Wednesday, we have, of course, it's the first Wednesday of the month, so Faribault Chamber folks will be with us. On Thursday, Bruce Burkhartsmeyer stops by. They're celebrating on that iconic store in downtown Faribault, their 76th anniversary. 76 years in business, of course, in 2028, we'll be celebrating our 80th year on the airwaves here at the Mighty 920. Brian, you probably weren't around in 1948. I know I was.
I was not. But I do like the shoe store.
Isn't it awesome?
It is.
We're very blessed. Not many places have a store like that.
No.
Anymore. So we're very, very blessed. And we will tell them that on Thursday, that you like the store.
I do. I hunt in Red Wing boots, so.
Well, there you go. Anyway, we're chatting a bit off the air. The governor is thinking about calling a special session to deal with what one party wants is a ban on assault weapons. And you and I were discussing what exactly isn't every weapon an assault weapon, really, when you think about it? How do you define what an assault weapon is?
Well, I would assume that it's any weapon designed to cause great bodily harm or death. It's the same definition that we use for dangerous weapons.
But all weapons can cause great bodily harm or death.
They can. Firearms, knives, vehicles. So, yes.
So, how would you fashion that is what I'm saying. I don't know.
Well, one of the interesting things coming up now is the possibility that they're not going to call a special session.
Well, they can't get the votes, so they're probably not.
And so instead, there's been rumblings of turning this into a constitutional amendment or in putting it to the voters. The problem for prosecutors when we look at things that are happening is we have to make sure that when we look at a law that it's clear enough that we can prosecute it, that we can figure out what the elements are, and that the general public knows how to follow the law. And there's a lot of the use of the term assault weapon or assault rifle. But what does it mean? How are they going to define it? What types of weapons are going to fall into that category? What types of guns? We talk about high-capacity magazines. And what types of high-capacity magazines? Is it a double stack of 15 rounds in a 9mm? Is it anything over 5 rounds in a rifle? What does it constitute, and is our general public going to understand it? And then is it clear enough for us to actually be able to prosecute the offense that it's meant to cover? And that's generally our concern as prosecutors when we look at new laws is how are we going to enforce this? And so if something like this happens, I would hope that the people drafting such an amendment would sit down with at least the Minnesota County Attorneys Association and get input on how to draft something that's enforceable or whether what they're looking at is even enforceable and if there's a way to do it better. There's no doubt that we need to get a control on violence. But we need to look at how we're going to do that. And is what we're doing an actual tool to solving the problem instead of just using words that sound good?
They want to put a ban in place because a lot of recent shootings, the people obtained the gun legally.
Yes.
It wasn't illegal. It was legal. Right? Isn't
Correct.
That why they want to do this ban on assault weapons?
Correct. And then how do you enforce it? Because presumably these are going to be firearms that are in private homes. So what mechanisms are they going to use?
Yeah,
are they going to have the law enforcement go into private homes to check for whether or not somebody's possessing a gun? Or is this just a mechanism for prosecution after something tragic happens?
Yeah. You bring up the same point, the exact same point, as our police chief John Sherwin brought up last Thursday on this AM Minnesota program. He said, who's gonna take these guns away from these people? Who's got the time to go give the, you know what I'm saying?
Who's going to take the risk?
That he mentioned too.
Because if you know that there's guns on the other side of a door, it becomes a high-risk scenario for our law enforcement officers. And the worst thing that any of us want to hear about is something happening to one of our officers who's sworn to protect our community. And if they're being put into harm's way, that's not a very favorable situation either.
So, being a prosecutor, do you have any suggestions as to how we resolve this issue?
I think that we need to get law enforcement, prosecutors, legislators, the governor, the attorney general, all together at a table and figure out what the actual problem is. If it's firearms, then figure out how to actually create laws that we're going to be able to enforce. But I think that in the past couple of years, there's been laws that are passed that are very difficult for us to enforce. And they're not thought out before they're passed. They don't think about the effects. They don't think about how difficult it is on law enforcement. They don't think about how difficult it is on the prosecutors to prosecute it. And then when we decline it, people look to us as to why we just let somebody go that committed a crime, when we have to look to how do we make our evidence fit the crime that the legislature gave us. And sometimes it's not easy. And so I think if we need to bring everybody to the table, and we need to create legislation that is safe for our law enforcement, capable for our prosecutors to enforce, and something that our legislators can go to their constituents with to say that this is a real solution. What is it? I don't know.
Can you give me an example of a law that was passed that you have not been able to enforce?
Some of our marijuana legislation has had some difficulty, especially in how we define things, how we define what possession is.
They've powered. Legalized marijuana now, haven't they?
In a sense, yes. And so it's legal for certain people to possess it. It's legal for them to grow it. We've got dispensaries that are about to start to open, if some of them haven't already, other than what's been on some of the reservations throughout the state.
And then some people who were convicted of a crime while they were high are seeing those pardoned or forgiven or whatever word you want to use, right?
Yes, there is the marijuana expungement law. And the battle that we're having right now is some of them that are being sent over to us are recommendations to expunge. And the marijuana is like count three of three convicted counts. And we've been arguing that you can't expunge a single minor count out of a complaint. And so we are currently dealing with that issue, which is something that is seemingly clear to us, but the people carrying out the legislature's will have other ideas. Another really good example of a law that I think, and many prosecutors and victim advocates think, was a short-sighted law is the Minnesota Rehabilitation and Reinvestment Act. And this is a law that allows people to get out even earlier from prison than the statutorily allowed one-third of time. They can have an additional 17% reduction of their sentence.
For good behavior?
Yes. They're supposed to participate in programming within the prison, vocational programming, rehabilitative programming, classes, therapy, things like that. And this is another one of those things that the Department of Corrections and Paul Schnell then can reduce sentences and let people out early. The problem is the legislature didn't think of our victims. And I would be happy to sit down with any of our legislators in Rice County and go through what we have to deal with when we're talking with victims on how we're going to resolve cases and how we try to manage expectations if a case doesn't go the way we want it to. And we reach resolutions through communicating with our victims. And then we go to court. We give the victim their voice in the court, which, by the way, is something that we have excelled at over the last 3 years, is giving victims their voices again. We let them speak in court. We encourage them, even when they disagree with us, we want them there to tell the judge that they disagree with what we're doing or that they agree with what we're doing. The defendant has his opportunity to speak, or her opportunity. It's called their right of allocution. And then a judge, after considering everything, hands out a sentence. And during that sentence, if it's a prison sentence, says that you will serve 2/3 and 1/3 will be on supervised release. The legislature did away with that. We can't tell victims anymore that that's a true statement. We get a resolution as prosecutors with the defendant and the victims being on board. And the judge accepts that resolution. And now by a sweep of a legislative pen, the Department of Corrections can undo our sentence and reduce it by up to 17% just because the defendant did programming in prison.
Doesn't mean they were successful in the programming. Is that what I'm hearing?
I would hope it would require them to be successful in the programming. But the problem is a lot of these crimes have high recidivism rates. Our violent criminals, our criminal sexual conduct cases, it's a high recidivism rate, regardless of the rehabilitation that's done. And we need to change the MRRA to reflect the crimes that we actually prosecute in this state. The only two crimes that are exempted from it is first degree premeditated murder, because that's life, and second degree intentional murder. Second degree unintentional murder, third degree murder, criminal vehicular homicide, manslaughter, first degree criminal sexual conduct against 14-year-olds, firearms offenses that are committed in the state of Minnesota, those can all be reduced by 17%. And so...
And you have no say in the matter.
Virtually no say. We've even been informed that if victims object because they should have to serve their whole sentence, that that's not sufficient to prevent the reduction in their sentence. And so I've been working with one of our legislators in Rice County, and I'd be happy to work with all of them to amend the MRRA to include all of our first and second degree crim sexes, to include any crime that results in the death of another human being, any crime dealing with dangerous weapons, firearm offenses, or crimes that have mandatory minimums. Because even the crimes where our law says you must serve at least this much, they still can reduce it by 17%. So mandatory minimum doesn't even mean mandatory minimum in Minnesota. And so I think that our legislature needs to take a hard look at what we are giving that good time on. If it's a drug offense and they've completed intensive programming and they've had the prolonged sobriety, those are the types of offenses that this may be warranted for. But the violent offenses where our victims had one expectation and are now having the rug pulled out from under them, those are not the ones that should be reduced.
Yeah. Well, we're about plumb out of time. Chief Sherwin voiced some, I would say that he echoed many of the things. We should have you both on together sometime.
That'd be great.
Maybe get the sheriff in here, too, and have a discussion about what should be done at the state level in terms of weapons. So would you be open to that?
Absolutely, I would. I speak with them on a regular basis.
I'll try to see if I can get that arranged. That concludes today's edition of AM Minnesota. Have yourselves a fantastic day. It's a beautiful day out there.